Milwaukee. Start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, trucks, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, it's Final Inspection on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Here's Steve Zocchi.
Hey, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is David Land from his YouTube channel, David Land, L-A-N-D. David, once again, thank you for joining the Final Inspection Show.
I'm happy to be here. I'm just disappointed that I came onto a show where you don't have very much news to cover. It's such a disappointment.
Yeah, we had Dennis Michelson on before earlier in the hour, and we were talking a bit about Harvick, but I wanted to kind of touch base with you on the Harvick penalty, maybe get a different perspective. So I'm kind of interested to hear what was your opinion on that. Was the penalty too harsh? Do you think maybe they looked a little bit too hard at the car at the R&D center? What's your take on it?
Well, I think you have to look at the tail of the tape, and especially in the last stint of the race when Harvick was behind Ryan Blaney, those two cars theoretically very similar. They both are powered by the Roush Yates engine like all the Ford cars are. But it was very clear that Harvick had some sort of advantage in the corners, particularly one and two, where he was able to get around Ryan Blaney by just being able to cut the corner a little bit tighter. You know, he could hold that line. So it was obvious that they had some sort of an advantage. So then you come to the inspection post-race, where they take it to the R&D center, and they discovered that the rear spoiler's off by a few millimeters, and they determined that that was out of regulations, and it determined the penalty. It's hard for me to say, because it's tough, because NASCAR is so open with their rules and the amount of development they allow, but at the same time, they're so tightly controlled at the same time, and if you step out of those boundaries, it seems like the penalties are almost incredibly draconian, but at the same time, Harvick still keeps his win, but he doesn't keep any of the benefits of the win. It's such a weird system. I don't know. It's a hard one to pin down, really.
Yeah, I got to think that there's a way that they can sit there and test this stuff at the track, so we're not waiting 3 days after the race to sit there and find out if the guy who won actually wins. You know what I mean? Yes, he gets credit for the win, but they, you know, dock him 40 points, so he goes from being locked into Miami to now only being 3 points to the good. It, you know, like you said, draconian, but if you can't figure out a way to figure it out at the track, and then I have a problem with them taking the top three back to R&D to sit there and totally dismantle these cars, put them back together, just searching for anything that's illegal. It just seems totally overboard to me. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And what's crazy about this whole thing, the way I understand it, the car passed pre-race tech inspection with flying colors. There was no problem there. But the actual penalty, or what the modification was, done on the grid before the race. So I guess looking at this particular situation, maybe you impound the cars after you tech them in the morning, and you don't let the teams touch them, or at least don't let them touch them without a NASCAR official staring at them the whole time.
My feeling is, if that's the case, if they actually were doing modifications on pit road, I mean, that's like almost like we know we're cheating. It's not an oversight. We're actually doing it. It's like, you know, it's not first degree murder, but I mean, it's murder with intent. It's cheating with intent. Then you should have to have the win taken away from him, in my opinion.
Yeah, but there's cameras all up and down pit road
that's
before
why I'm
the
wondering,
race.
It's you know, I just wonder about that. I mean, is it, if, you know, well, this goes back to the old rule where Big Bill France, he didn't like disqualifying cars later. You know, if there's a problem, we do it right away, because he didn't want, you know, Joe Sixpack or Joe Lunchpail, whatever you want to call him, the next morning read the paper and found that, you know, Joe Blow was disqualified and you know, Tiny Lund won the race instead, or somebody, and instead of the guy he saw. You know, he wants the fan, when they leave the track, to know that's the winner of the race.
Yeah, I'm with David. I think, you know, once you pass Morning Tech, that's it. Impound the cars. You can't touch them. And, you know, God knows they've got enough NASCAR officials all over that grid.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Yeah, you see, I call them astronauts.
There's 800 of them out there.
They look ridiculous, but that's just me. Anyways, and they also get bigger as they get promoted up the chain, too. I did notice that. You notice how the truck officials are a lot thinner than the...
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anyways, besides... All right, I'm getting away from the point here. But anyways, yeah, you see them all over the place. You know, and it's just...
It's crazy.
And what Dennis brought out, and that we've been saying on this show for a couple of years, the fans need to talk about the racing, not who's cheating or what rules were broken in that. Or the same thing with the pit road violations.
Well, and sometimes you don't even have to cheat to get nailed. David, real quick, because we touched on it with Dennis, you want to give your thoughts on the fact that NASCAR doesn't know how to count to three?
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe that. That was one of the things that just – How is that an oversight? You know, like, oh my, and you did it to one of your biggest stars. It wasn't like you just did it to the guy in the back of the field. Who cares anyway? It wasn't going to be competitive. You did it to Jimmy Johnson. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you the state of NASCAR officiating and the fact that something needs to change, I don't know what would.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Well, I guess there's nothing more to be said with that. I guess it's just
ridiculous.
But you know, you did bring up I did like that point you brought up earlier about Harvick. You know, coming up and making the late pass. You know, he was the only one that had no problem passing, and you wonder if the officials, you know, upstairs were like looking at each other like they gave themselves the, you know, the stink eye. Like, he's the only guy that can pass like that. Let's go take a look at that car. There's got to be something going on. You wonder, you know, maybe he should have struggled a bit more when he passed him, you know.
But he passed when he absolutely dominated the field at Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, you know, he smokes the field every single year at Atlanta, and that's never a problem, but it's a problem now. So
Wasn't Atlanta the place where that Reddit discovered that the rear window was caving in on his car?
Yeah, that's where it was reported. That. Yeah, no, I thought that was
later. I think Atlanta he was clear on because I know that after Harvick's window got dinged, I want to say Larson got nailed a couple weeks later. I'm looking it up now to find out. And I don't know how to spell penalty. Steve, ask a question.
while we're looking that up, let's talk about David's YouTube channel. What's the latest on your YouTube channel?
Well, I just did a video detailing. Now, obviously, it's a long way away, but I really felt like it was necessary to talk about the fact that we're going to have a pretty good bump day, it looks like, next year for the Indianapolis 500. I said, you know, we're close to, I think there's 38 solid entries that look like they're going to be lining up to qualify come May. And so I did a video detailing that and kind of speculating on who might fill the open seats. It's exciting times in terms of thinking about the Indy 500. And, of course, Tony Stewart has been running his mouth quite a bit about a potential Indy 500 run.
He
so who
ain't
knows
running.
What'll happen there.
He ain't running, I'll tell you right now.
I would love to see it.
Oh, it ain't going to happen. He can't even fit in one for God's sakes.
Oh, he's not that fat. And it was Vegas where Harvick got nailed with that window penalty.
Yeah.
Bump day, that's going to be fantastic. That's always one of my favorite days. You know, there is so much on the line. The pressure is all over those guys. I love it.
Well, I tell you what, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with David Land on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway, along with David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is David Land. Make sure to check out his YouTube channel, David Land. That's David and then L-A-N-D. David, once again, thanks for joining the show. And one more quick NASCAR hit. We're going to talk about Martin Truex going to the 19. And I know you spoke about this a couple weeks ago. You did a silly season NASCAR episode on YouTube, and it just made sense even back then that he would end up in the 19, didn't you?
Yeah, it's no secret that you could consider the 78 car a fifth Gibbs car. I think the pit crews from Joe Gibbs Racing, certainly they get a lot of R&D and technical support from them, and I think it's been a bit of a stick in Joe Gibbs' craw that Furniture Row in a lot of ways has outperformed them in the last couple of years. So it made a whole lot of sense to see not only Martin Truex go over to the 19 team, taking over from Daniel Suarez, but also for Cole Pearn to follow him over there. That combination has been so potent, as we've seen in the last couple of years, that I think that's a super team at Gibbs now. You really don't have a weak link there anymore.
Excellent point.
Yeah, one quick follow-up with that. Do you think, like I do, that Gibbs – you know, this was completely calculated, and Gibbs priced out Furniture Row so that he could take away Truex and Pearn?
Oh, yeah. I think that's more or less confirmed. I mean, obviously, Barney hasn't started talking about that necessarily. But if you read between the lines, I think that's obvious what happened. I mean, you can't always outdo the factory team without the factory going,
Yep, you know? Exactly.
And staying in the silly season genre or topic, I guess, switching over to IndyCars, Marcus Ericsson coming over to the IndyCar series. That's kind of a cool deal, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I even said in the video I had covering it, we didn't get Fernando Alonso, but I guess we'll take Marcus Ericsson. Marcus Ericsson is kind of one of those drivers that has kind of been under the radar. I think a lot of people have either written him off or at least underrated him because of the equipment he's been in Formula One. If you look at the list of teams he's been with, it's Caterham, the Sauber Racing team, and now the kind of more heavily funded Sauber Alfa Romeo team. And none of those you could particularly say are front-running cars, certainly. And up until this year, he really hasn't been in a car that's capable of scoring regular points in Formula One. So a lot of people are fairly high on Marcus Ericsson, who are, you know, kind of well-versed in Formula One. And like a lot of former F1 drivers that you see come over into the States, where, of course, our rules are much more closed down. There isn't as much development on the cars, and the performance gap is much tighter, especially considering that Marcus Ericsson is jumping into the car that Robert Wickens was competing regularly each week in and week out for race wins in. That is great equipment. I think he's really going to enjoy his time here, and I think he's going to thrive. I mean, look at a contemporary, I guess you could say, is Max Chilton. And mm-hmm. Max Chilton has certainly been one of those drivers. Didn't impress a whole lot in F1, but has found a nice place to race in IndyCar.
And you teased it in the last segment, but 40 cars at the Indy 500 next year. Do you think that's I guess the what's been putting the brakes on it is the engine manufacturers. So is Toyota and Chevrolet actually going to unscrew the drain, so to speak, or the spigot, and let some more engines out there?
The way I understand it is if you get your engine order, I think it's by February, if you order your month of May engine by then, it doesn't really matter how many engines are out there. Chevy and Honda can make that happen. As long as the check clears, you know, as long as you've got the money and you've got the capability to, you know, have all that, have Chevy and Honda prepare that infrastructure for the month of May, it can happen. 40 cars, the way I look at it, is going to be very difficult because it's going to require every possibility that's out there right now to come to fruition. I think the realistic number is probably 36. I would be ecstatic if there's 38, like I made the prediction of in the video. I think 38, I think we'd be real, real happy if we saw that many cars for the 500. But I do think there's going to be more cars than there were last year, simply because there's more funded drivers or more drivers with money this year than there were last year. The teams are better off. I think, honestly, one thing that we're not really talking about in the growth of IndyCar, which I think is a major point, is the fact that the new NBC TV deal has really helped the teams sell sponsorship, because you don't have that kind of stagnation that IndyCar racing had with NBC or with ABC. You have a new broadcasting partner who seems to be very interested in taking an active role in growing the sport. And I think for the sponsors and for the partners in IndyCar, that's a positive, and that means they're willing to invest, and that's why we're seeing kind of this increase in the car count.
Yeah, I agree that the move to NBC is going to be huge for IndyCar, but do you think that a lot of their races are going to be buried on the NBC Sports Channel, kind of like how a lot of the NASCAR races are, which will probably lead to, you know, less than stellar ratings?
Late in the season, yes. I'm kind of expecting it to be a little bit like it was with ABC, where you see a lot of the early season races on the big NBC when NBC doesn't really have any major properties to broadcast. Once you start getting into the golf season, once you get later in the season and football starting to rev up, I think you're going to see more of those races end up on NBCSN. I would hope that they are using their network races wisely and putting some of the major events, like obviously Long Beach or the season finale at Laguna Seca, on network TV. But we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, we saw how they bungled the season finale this year, so we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Now, you cover basically NASCAR, IndyCar, F1, everything like a blanket. What's your favorite series to cover and or to watch?
Well, I think it would be IndyCar. I really do think it would be IndyCar. I mean, it grew up, 25 miles from the Speedway. That's always been a very soft spot in my heart. My dad worked for the IRL in the early days. I don't think anything will ever replace IndyCar racing in my heart. But I'll tell you what, as a spectator, there are a few things that are better than endurance sports car racing. It's almost old school when you go to a Petit Le Mans or the 6 hours of Watkins Glen, and you have all the variety of machinery, the different noises, the different shapes, the different sounds, the international flavor. That's really spectacular stuff. I really haven't begun to become a huge fan of sports car racing in the last 10 years, because it's been so fun to kind of experience that, because American racing has kind of lost that, unfortunately, particularly the IndyCar side. You know, you don't have the variety that you used to have over there, at least on the technical side.
Speaking with David Land, make sure to check out his YouTube channel, David Land, L-A-N-D, on YouTube, on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline here. And one thing that I think it's cool about your channel is it's not just a talking head channel, but you actually talk about it's not just an opinion channel, but you got some cool reviews that you do, videos, video reviews, video games, all sorts of stuff. But the this one kind of caught my attention. I think it's your last one you did. It's the 2018 podium diecast set from the Indy 500. And I'm a bit of a diecast collector, obviously, because I'm an older guy. I like the old stuff. I just picked up the latest replicas. I got the 1974 AJ Foyt pole car, the Coyote. But and I've seen, if you look at David's videos, he's got a bunch of diecasts usually in the background. But tell us about this diecast set from 2018.
So it's something that the exclusive manufacturer of the modern IndyCar stuff, Greenlight, has started doing in the last couple of years, where they take the top three finishers in the Indy 500 and they produce a little three-car 164 scale set with each of the cars in their accurate race day livery. Those things are a lot of fun to me, because as a kid, I played with the old Micro Machines. If anyone remembers the Micro Machines.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about those, yeah.
They had a 33-car set of the 96 Indy 500. And I used to play with that so much. But what was cool about that set was all the cars were displayed on a kind of faux starting grid. So for me, a set like the one that Greenlight has put out with the podium finishers on a faux yard of bricks front straightaway set really is a very nostalgic thing for me. And it's always a lot of fun, particularly for me with the model cars, the diecast and stuff. I'm a stickler for details. So it's really cool when you have a set that claims to be the top three finishers of the Indy 500. Every detail of those cars has to be right. And at least for that set, more or less, they are.
That's awesome. See, I am not a stickler for details. I was walking through my house, true story, a week ago, and I pointed at my wife and I said, "When did you hang that picture up?" And she goes, "It's been up for 8 years. I'd never seen it before in my life." So,
Oh no.
Yeah. What's your favorite diecast that's out that you have in your collection?
It would have to be the 118 Mini Champs Buddy Lazier Indy 500 winner. That car regularly goes for something like $300 mint in the box on eBay. I got it for like $25 out of the box. I was so happy because Buddy Lazier was, you know, if people don't know, he's been my favorite driver. Again, I kind of grew up in that IRL era. I had all the stuff from like the 96 500. I used to watch that highlight reel tape of that race on repeat. And it was so cool to get that. And it's actually a pretty decent model for 96. So it's fantastic. And if you notice in my videos, it's front and center directly behind me because it's really a prized possession of mine.
That's pretty cool. Let's see. For me, it would have to be the carousel cars.
Those things are beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah. I think it's the Lotus. I think the Joe Leonard Lotus, the turbine. And the replicas came out with that 67 turbine. That's pretty cool, too. I have an affinity to STP cars, though. So.
Well, I don't blame you. They're beautiful. I wish they'd do Gordy's car. The 82 one. I can't believe nobody's done that yet.
That's right. Well, yeah, they cheated and they did the 84 car because it's an 84 March and they did that mold so you could do a bunch of 84 marches, but that's the closest you can get to that. That's because it's a Wildcat and there's not too many you can do. You could do, of course, Gordy's car, but you could do a Mario car too, but... Yeah, I just the two
the real 81 winner, right?
Yeah. Well, I know a fellow that owns all three of them. He owns the 81 car, the 81 winner of Bobby Unser, the 80 second place, the 81 the Wildcat, Mario Andretti, and then even the third place, the McLaren of Vern Schuppan. So
some people would consider Vern Schuppan the real winner of the 81 Indy 500.
There you go, the man after my heart. Yep, very underrated driver too, and a heck of a nice guy. David, as always, we thank you for being on the show, and hopefully we got two more shows we're doing this year, and hopefully we'll have you on, if not next week, our finale for after Homestead.
I would love to. I mean, any show you get to talk about Vern Schuppan, I mean, it's a pretty good show, right?
I have to agree with you. Thank you, David. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, you're listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. I'm Steve Zotke, along with Jeff Orlowski, chatting racing in a little local slant this segment. As, yes, it's been 30 years. What's been 30 years? It's been 30 years since Alan Kulwicki's first victory.
Wow.
You don't remember that, do you?
No. I was just a young pup then.
I was also a young pup, but not as young as you. It was the 1988 Checker 500. I thought it was Checkers. I think Checker was a fuel, like a gas station chain out in the Southwest back then.
Didn't they have the green and white checkered flag?
Something like that, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. But Alan Kubica, in my favorite of all of his race cars, the 87-88 Thunderbird, the Xerox sponsorship was my favorite. I always thought that was aesthetically. And also, for a period of time, many of my longtime friends will remember I had an 88 Ford Thunderbird also.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but Alan Kubica, yes, that was his first win. Actually, probably could have won a race earlier at Pocono, but was taken out by Dale Earnhardt and was very frustrated at that. We kind of, fans of Alan Kubica and those that knew him, knew it was just a matter of time before he got that first win, because I think at that time he had already won like 5 or 6 pole positions.
Wow.
So when he won that race, it's pretty cool. Passed Terry Labonte late in the race to win. And for those keeping track, it was Alan Kubica and the Xerox Ford Thunderbird winning. It was the inaugural race out at Phoenix, which I thought was pretty cool. I thought I always liked Phoenix as a track. Thought it was kind of a cool. It was kind of quirky, as I've mentioned before. And unfortunately, NASCAR and the people that own it now have taken all the quirkiness out of Phoenix, so it looks just like another racetrack, but that's just my commentary. Terry Labonte in the number 11 Budweiser Monte Carlo Junior Johnson car finished second. Davey Allison, of course, in the then it was Harry Rainier. Haviland Ford Thunderbird was third. Of course, the great Bill Elliott, Coors number 9. And Rusty Wallace in the Kodiak, though.
Nice.
Kodiak Pontiac Grand Prix was 5th. So a lot of memories there. Unfortunately, the memory that comes to me a few weeks later, we lost Norm Nelson. Norm Nelson, a great in the USAC stock car ranks, died a couple weeks after Allen's first win. And my father and I went to his funeral, and Jerry Kubica, Alan's father, was there. We spoke, and we talked to some people, and I remember we talked to Norm's widow, Carolyn, at the race. And he, at that time, he passed away from complications from emphysema, if I recall. And but he knew that Alan had won the race. He knew enough what was going on, and so he. And he had known Alan since he was just a little kid. So I thought that was pretty cool that Alan won a race while Norm was still around. He really appreciated that he could kind of see that Alan was on his way. I thought that was really special. And Jerry Kubica thought that was pretty special, too. So I always remember that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was certainly a sad, sad event when Norm Nelson passed away. But with the knowledge of him knowing that he knew that Alan had won his first NASCAR race, that was pretty, pretty cool. So
Yeah, that's awesome. Just one correction, Steve. While you were talking, I was looking up the that Pocono race with Kubica, and what I came across was that he wasn't taken out by Earnhardt, but it was Joey Logano that out Kubica in that race. So just so we've got our facts straight, Joey Logano took out Alan Kubica at Pocono.
And also last week they had the Southeastern Wisconsin Short Track Hall of Fame had their 2018 inductions, and I have not been able to make it there last couple of years though, and have been there before. It's a pretty neat deal. This year, of course, they had radio personality Todd Behling was inducted, who I mentioned earlier. Jerry Eckert, one of my favorite guys, just is a short track icon. And I've always, when I mentioned Jerry Eckert to anybody, I always use a caveat. He's what's right in short track racing. He's a guy that's been racing since pretty much I've been alive. And I guess he started racing out in Columbus, Jefferson, out in Madison area, and started to run late models in the 70s, and always had an orange number 61, and just has been racing for years, and to see him was still running this year, and to see him get his due, he is deservedly now a member of the Southeast Wisconsin Short Track Hall of Fame. Howie Leto, another gentleman, very well deserving, just a crew chief, but not only a crew chief, but a mentor to many of the big giants in auto racing today, including Jimmy Johnson. If you ever get a situation, talk to Jimmy Johnson. and you want to get his attention, mention Howie Lettle, and his ears will perk up, and he'll chat. He'll talk to you about Howie Lettle because he really respected and understand how important Howie Lettle was in his development as a young driver transitioning to where he was from the desert and, you know, dirt tracks and whatnot to asphalt stock car racing. Very important. And he also guided a driver that's unfortunately forgotten, Pat Schauer, too. He was a Wisconsin driver who was unfortunately killed early on in 1981, I believe, was on the verge of greatness. Ken Lund, of course, he helped. And of course, Ted Musgrave, too. Scott Hansen, too. When those two were hooked up, they just dominated short track racing, including going out to the Copper Classic out in Phoenix. And I remember about 19, I think it was 93, they had an ARCA race at Milwaukee, and Hansen won the pole and just ran away with that thing.
Nice.
It was watching him going through the corners, and that car was so hooked up. It was like on a slot track. But Howie Lettle was just one of those guys that just really, really well-respected. Also, Tony Raines, Kelly Byers, Travis Dassel, guys like that that are still around. Howie passed away in 2010 at age 62, far, far too early. John McCarns is also inducted, one of the big guys, one of the behind-the-scenes type guys, one of the great promoters in racing in the area, and Larry Ninneman, who unfortunately I don't really know him that well, but was a short track driver, very excellent. I remember reading a lot about him in Midwest Racing News when I was a kid. So very well deserved, and a tip of the hat to those guys.
That's one hell of an induction class.
Yeah, it really was, and it's a neat. If you get a chance, if you're in the Hartford area, it's at the museum out there, right by what's the restaurant out in Hartford, downtown Hartford, the Mine Chef. It's one block west. And then you take a right, and you'll see it right there. It is a neat museum. It's in the auto museum there, and they have they also have a theater there that's attached to it. I mean, I think it's one of the best kept secrets in southeastern Wisconsin. It is such a nice facility that they have there, and it is very nice. And they also the museum has a car collection that is really. What I like about it, it's got a lot of different cars in there. You know, you see a lot of museums and you kind of see, it's like when, if you go to a car show, I mean, no offense if you have one, but if you have a 69 Camaro, 70 Chevelle, everybody's seen those cars.
Yeah.
You know, the Challengers and whatnot, you know, those are fine. Nothing wrong with it, but you've seen a lot of them. What's nice about this museum, it's got a lot of cars that were built in Wisconsin. So there's a lot of AMC stuff. But also Hissel in that, and another older manufacturer that were made in Wisconsin, and a lot of other oddball kind of cars. I remember going in there. I think they have an Oldsmobile Omega.
Nice.
That's like mint. It's nice. Like right off the showroom floor. You know, just a lot of oddball cars like that are in there. It's really, really cool. But highly recommend it. If you're out in the neighborhood, you have a chance, trust me, you will enjoy yourself. And the museum, the history, the southeastern Wisconsin Short Track Museum is really cool too. A lot of artifacts. They have cars in there. They have a couple of Robbie Reiser's cars in there now, and they keep rotating the cars that are in and out. So they do a really, really nice job. So make
That's
sure
awesome.
You get out there.
That's awesome.
Look them up. You can look them up online at SEWIS Short Track HOF. So it's S-E for Southeast, and then Wisconsin, W-I-S, or W-I, I should say, because then it's Short Track, and then HOF.com.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I posted it on our Facebook site, too.
Well, and follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. There's tons of great content that goes up there pretty much daily. Again, tip of the hat to you, Steve. You just do a phenomenal job on there. Hit us up on Twitter. We're at SFI1250 on Twitter. Give a like on there as well. Tons of great content, articles, pictures, anything that you can want. Just fantastic. You can follow Steve Zocchi at Steve Zocchi, ZAUTKE. I'm at Jeff_Orloski, ORLOSKI. Steve's a lot more exciting than me. I don't post that much because every time I post something, I get in trouble. So, I try not to post that often.
And we'll be back after this and more on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Getting towards the end of the show here, so let's do our predictions. Dennis Michelson had Kevin Harvick as his winner of Phoenix tomorrow. So I'm going to go with, I'm going to do the same. I got to go with Harvick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's definitely going to be motivated.
David Land went with Harvick too.
Yeah, I'm going to be different. You know me. But I'm still going to go with one of the big three. But give me the 18. I picked him last week.
Yeah,
he didn't have
pick,
a great
yeah.
finish. I think he bounces back and takes the checkered flag. It's hard when you're Kevin Harvick and you go from thinking that you're guaranteed a spot at Miami. And I know I've been saying he was 4 points to the good. He's only 3 points ahead of his teammate, Kurt Busch, heading into Phoenix, which is a race that Harvick dominates. So, conventional wisdom says pick Harvick. I think that it's going to kind of create a little black cloud. And yes, he's going to be motivated, but, Kevin Harvick has made some he's made a lot of mistakes, whether it's speeding on pit road.
Yeah.
Whether it's bad pit stops by his crew, as much as they have kind of dominated this season, and not so much lately, but the beginning and the middle part of the season, he's kind of struggling right now. So, I definitely think that he points his way through to Miami, but if Harvick gets into an accident in stage one, you could be looking at a Miami final with no four car racing for the championship.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see it either. He couldn't ask for a better track than Phoenix right now.
And I think that's why I still think for my predictions, we said a couple shows ago, what I think what everybody wants and what I think most of the fans would want and NASCAR would want would be the big three with Chase Elliott. However, with the Logano situation, I think it's going to be the big three and Logano for your final four.
Okay. I am going to switch mine up a little bit. I think
your race winner or your final four?
No, the final four. I'm going to actually take out Martin Truex, even though he's in second going in and he's got a 22-point lead over fourth place Harvick right now. He's 25 to the good out of fifth place Kurt Busch. But I'm going to say that Kurt Busch sneaks in. And Truex, Cole Pearn, his crew chief, came out this week and said that, yes, it's a distraction with the team shutting its doors at the end of the season and all that. He's kind of been struggling. So I think that Truex has a rough day and kind of finds himself on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I'm an oddball kind of guy, and I was like numbers. I'm kind of a numbers guy, not numbers in a weird way, like some people, like Carl Haas was a numbers in a kind of a weird way. But I've always been number. It's a numbers thing. I don't whatever. But so here you got Martin Truex, defending champion, 78, which not only in NASCAR, but I think in just in sports generally. Is not a number you see much unless you're an offensive lineman,
right?
Basically. And if it is, he's probably second string. There weren't too many good number 78s out there. So 78, I think, is like one. If you take for digits 1 through 99, 78, I think, is in your bottom five. And so now he's going over to Joe Gibbs. What number is he in?
19.
Which is also a number that you just don't see too often. Now, yes, I know Robin Yount, Johnny Unitas, but how many quarterbacks in the NFL, because quarterbacks can have 1 through 19. How many 19s are there?
Not many.
I can't think of any. In fact, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think the last 19 there was in the NFL. There might have been college or something. I'm not thinking of, but there's not too many 19s out there. So I just think that's funny that, so, you know, he's going from 19, you know, from 78 to 19. It just, for if you're a numerologist or whatever, it's kind of weird that he's going in that direction. It's just something that just kind of came to me. But I still say, you know, I just think the Kyle Busch runs well here, obviously, at Phoenix. And you got Kevin Harvick, of course, dominating. And Truex, I still think he can, yes, all the distractions and whatnot. But then again, he's basically going from, you know, I mean, they were affiliated with Joe Gibbs. So, I mean, if it just makes sense for him. And I think in some ways, it's okay, it's a bad situation, but what's the best situation that could have occurred for him? Going to 19, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, he's keeps his relationship with Toyota.
Right.
You know, it's not like he has to get used to the feel of a new manufacturer or anything
like
that.
And now maybe he won't be treated, and the team won't be treated like a redheaded stepchild like they have at times when Joe Gibbs, you know, fining or suspending. Yep. Where he had, was that last? Was that?
Last season, there was, you know, a little dust up on pit road, and Gibbs was there to put his foot on the throat of the 78 team and said, "Know your role and get back in line because we are the boss and you are the redheaded stepchild." So, yeah, it's good. I do kind of feel bad for Daniel Suarez. He was brought up too quick because of the retirement of Carl Edwards. Yes, he won the Busch Series title. But he was supposed to go another season or so in the Busch Series and then get brought up. But he, because of the surprise retirement of Smiley, Mr. Whitetooth, you know, Daniel Suarez got pushed up a little quicker than he should have.
I've always considered Suarez a good driver, but not an exceptional driver. I don't think he, to be honest, I don't think he deserves to be in A equipment. Nothing against it. It's fine. He was, you know, he was in A equipment. He could have shined a little bit better, but I don't think he's, I hate saying he's not Joe Gibbs material. I don't want to be, you know, rip on the kid, but I just think he's a good driver to, you know, average to above average NASCAR driver, which there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, he's a very talented driver. I just don't think he's,
okay, real quick.
He's not Christopher Bell.
Right. Well, very few are.
But that's, I mean, look at the people they got in the turn, you know, coming up. So,
oh, I
mean,
know.
If you, who are you going to have? Suarez or Christopher Bell? I'm going to have Christopher Bell. I mean, it's
8 days a week.
No-brainer, yeah.
So, okay, real quick, and we're running out of time here. But who in a non-competitive car, what driver would you think could excel if he was in A equipment? Are you picking Timmy Hill?
Oh, you mean, no, I mean,
what driver in crappy equipment could, you know, elevate and become a household name if they were in stellar equipment?
I think Kyle Larson. I think Kyle Larson is in, we thought Ganassi was going to be an A car, but I think at best has been a B+.
Yeah.
But I think most of the rate at most of the tracks, that's a B car, maybe even B-.
Yeah.
And maybe even C+ at times.
Well, absolutely. Or worse. And, you know, I could definitely make the argument that nobody had a more disappointing season than Kyle Larson.
And I like to see Bubba. I would love to see Bubba Wallace in like a Hendrick car or something.
Me too.
You know, if it's not going to happen, but let's, you know, and plus these guys don't get hurt anymore. But there are times these guys would get hurt and somebody would get moved up or somebody would have a shot in a car. You don't see that anymore, but it would be kind of neat to see a couple of these guys. You know, like, you know, I like to see Bubba Wallace run in the, let's say, some, you know, not wishing any will to Jimmy Johnson, but, you know, let's say Jimmy Johnson has to get an appendectomy or something. I don't know if he has to get sit right out of the car and they put in Bubba Wallace. I would, you know, that'd be something that, hey, that would definitely pique my interest. Well, let's see what Bubba can do in the 48 car or something like that. So,
in good equipment with his personality, you know, those Periscope videos that he does after the race, you know, the kid could be a superstar. But in order for him to become that, he has to compete for top tens. And being in the petty car, there's just no shot. And I feel
he's
bad.
He's a heck of a drummer, too.
Yeah, he is. I've seen some of them videos. Yeah. I've seen some of those videos. And he likes metal.
Well, you know, he's not perfect.
Oh, that makes him perfect, brother.
Thank you for listening to the Final Inspection Show. And we also would like to thank Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda for supporting the show. We'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.